What's up, everyone, and welcome to a brand new season and episode of From the Lions Cove podcast. I'm your host, Marcelo. First things first, let's thank God for a new season. I've been preparing, putting a lot of time and effort to plan out all of these episodes that we have planned, and it is going to be fantastic. I'm looking forward to it, but we have a very special guest here, my good friend, my man, Bobby Jerome. It's a pleasure to have you on this podcast.
No, it's a great pleasure to be here. I have been listening to this for a little bit now, and, you know, I'm very happy with the work that you've done. And, you know, Marcelo, you and I know each other pretty well outside of the stuff that we do here, you know, on campus. So it's very fun to be on this. I'm looking forward to a great day today.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a great episode. I mean, I've known Bobby for a long time. Me and him have had a few classes together here at John Carroll, and yeah, it's been awesome. We've been close ever since, and one thing that describes Bobby is such a caring man. He is very selfless. So this summer, as most of you know, I run my own summer basketball league. I needed some help. Bobby reached out to the WJCU Studios team, gathered a bunch of people to come help out with my league, just showed up. They did great. Everyone loved the broadcasting team. And that just shows how great of a guy he is, the fact that he's going out of his way to do something for a bigger cause. I mean, it was awesome. So, Bobby, thank you again for that because, you know, that was truly one of the greatest things ever. And this year is going to be even better, so I'm looking forward to it.
For sure. We're going to be back. And, you know, I wouldn't go too far as saying I'm such a great guy. You know, yeah, I'd like to stay humble with all of that. My goons are always looking for something else to do during the weekend, so that's why we brought them out. So we'll be bringing them back again this year, and it's going to continue to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to doing that once again this upcoming year.
Yeah, all right. So what role did sports play in your life growing up, and how did they shape your early years? Because, you know, now you're a sports broadcaster, sports director here at John Carroll University. You do all the radio coverage. You oversee, manage, mentor staff. I mean, you lead efforts for the group for fundraising purposes. You're the play-by-play and color commentator. I mean, you do content on social media. Bobby, you do a lot here at John Carroll. So how did sports play like in your life growing up?
You know, this is not the path that I thought I was going to go down with sports. I thought, I come from a sports family, you know, the hobbies that we pick up when we're kids in my family, the things that we do on the side, it's always been sports, right? Every year you're growing up from, you know, when you're in kindergarten until you're at least in high school, you're playing three, you're playing baseball, you're playing basketball, you're playing football if you're a guy, or, you know, something else in the winter. But this I came from a family that loves sports. I didn't imagine that I'd be getting into media or radio or anything technical with it, but sports has played a big role in my life because it's opened the doors for me to get here. You learn a lot of things in your childhood when you play sports. You learn how to be on a team. You learn how to collaborate with other people. You know how to take direction from somebody that isn't your parent. Like, that's usually your first opportunity outside of class where it's structured with a teacher, or outside of at home where it's one of your parents or a grandparent or whatever. That's how you learn how to take instruction from somebody else and take criticism. And that's how you learn how to develop a work ethic and become better. So it's all skills that transfer to other parts of your life, even if sports isn't what you end up going into. Or, you know, obviously I'm not an athlete right now, right? You're not going to see me on a field at John Carroll anytime soon. You didn't see me a lot in high school on a field either. But I've had a lot of fun doing this activity where I'm still involved with sports, with something that I loved growing up that's played such a big role in my life. And, you know, I have to credit sports for everything that I do that I love right now. You know, I wouldn't have gotten my job at my company if I didn't have the work that I did at this station. I wouldn't have gotten into music or gotten into production or any of the social media stuff at this station or the leadership. I wouldn't have gotten into any of it if I wasn't interested in sports in the first place. And, you know, that's how sports has kind of been the first domino to fall with, you know, every good thing that I love in my life that's, you know, I love doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you said it right on. I mean, sports truly plays, like, a big part in your life because you can relate it to, like, other, like, aspects. I mean, even with, like, you know, like, the league and even, like, this podcast, just sports, like, revolves around so much, and you can also relate it back to, like, your, like, you know, your life.
Yeah.
And even, like, personal stuff that happens throughout it. So
you learn how to deal with adversity. You learn how to deal with troubles. You learn how to deal with success. I mean, there are a lot of people who you can tell in their adult lives, in the corporate world, and in school, who maybe they didn't play sports or they didn't have something where they were on a team growing up because they don't know how to handle a loss. They don't know how to handle criticism. They don't know how to handle, conflict. And I think sports helps a lot with that. It's transferable life skills that I think every single kid growing up needs to play sports or do something on a team where you learn those values.
Right, right. So, like, what sports did you play growing up, and how did you, like, get into those sports?
So I was a big Cleveland sports guy. You know, obviously I'm ride or die with the Guardians / Indians, the Browns and the Cavs. My three sports were what I watched on TV. So, you know, obviously I came from a football family. I know you're a Mayfield guy, Marcelo.
Right.
So, you know, Anthony and Michael Canganelli are both my cousins. I both watched them growing up. They were the guys who got me interested in football. And, you know, football was my bread and butter sport that I loved the most. Baseball was the sport that I was best at growing up. That was probably I was a guy who made contact and swung the bat. So, you know, I was a guy who would, work my way into the top five of the lineup. Just so that's I consider that a success.
Yeah.
So, baseball is a sport where it's something that you do in the summer with your friends that you don't, see anymore because you're not in school every single day together. But I love playing baseball growing up as well. You know, there's a beauty to that game, and basketball as well. You know, I suck at basketball. You know, I'm a short little kid who is under 5'10", just running around, can't dribble a ball. You know, definitely looked like the football player on a basketball court sometimes, just falling out of every single game. But I enjoy playing basketball a lot when I was a kid. I enjoy watching the sport a lot. And each one of those sports has their own unique aspect when it comes to commentating as well. You know, each one of them has a beauty with it as well. Football is structured for broadcast where, you know, play-by-play guy has from when the team breaks the huddle until the ref blows his whistle at the end of the play, then color works in there, and it's set for breaks. At the end of a possession, when the ball gets turned over to the other team, you go to break. And it's structured for that. So if you're getting into broadcasting, football's a great sport to start with if you know the sport.
Yeah.
Baseball, I'll actually go to basketball next. Basketball flipping right into the winter season right after football's over, it becomes a speed run where, you know, everything's happening at such a quick pace. You got to pick up your pace of a tempo. You got to talk really quick, and, you know, you got to enunciate every single word correctly because they're moving all around the floor. And you got to talk like that for the whole time. And it's a speed run for your play-by-play, and it's tough. And you don't know when to take timeouts or work your color guy in. And then you move over to baseball, and you got to slow it down and enunciate every single word correctly because everyone's going to be, you know, you can get kind of romantic with your calls. But, these sports playing a big role in my life. It's transferred from when I was a kid until now, and I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Wow. I mean, that's crazy because I never, thought about it like that. Football, you have, your, TV timeouts. You have, 2-minute warnings. You have those, kind of small breaks.
Yeah.
And then with basketball, it's nonstop, and you get, a small break, and it's right back to it. And then baseball, the games, I mean, they used to be long. Now they're kind of, shorter.
A little shorter.
But, I mean, still, baseball is, a slower-paced game.
Yeah.
So, it's crazy. I've never, thought about it like that.
It's about all the action that's going on in the court. Basketball's all action, and sometimes you go 15 seconds of game time between two timeouts or a stoppage of play so you can talk more and get a breather. Sometimes you go 5 minutes straight where you got to be at that quick tempo, and it's, you run out of breath very quickly and have to take a swig of water, the second that you get a chance to take a breather. And basketball, it's tough doing that. But then, you get to baseball and you take 15 seconds at a time in between pitches before anything happens in the game. So, and making the flip when you're in school, making the flip from one sport to the other, from basketball to baseball, it's sometimes in a matter of 2 weeks. It's a tough transition, right? Right in the spring. There's a completely different aspect to it with both the sports themselves that I loved playing growing up and then the commentating. And with my commentating career that I've built up, knowing those sports from playing them growing up and, microanalyzing all of them, watching SportsCenter in the morning every single day, that's what's given me the knowledge that's helped me understand everything that I use on air now.
Wow. Truly, truly amazing. So were there any other moments or were there other people in your life that inspired your love for sports as a whole?
So I got to start with my family. I would be wrong if I didn't do that. My dad and my grandfather are two baseball diehards. My dad's been a season ticket holder ever since the Browns came back in 99, which
wow.
I don't know why he builds himself for disappointment every single year, but, you know, we still have a good time when we go down there. But, you know, he got me involved very early on. My grandfather was a guy who was always looking over my shoulder, and, you know, he was a great coach back in his day, so he was always making adjustments wherever he could. And obviously looking up to the role models in my family that I have, you know, like I mentioned, the two Canganelli brothers,
right.
Watching them play baseball, watching them play football, you know, those are my top two sports. Watching them play those every single Friday night, you know, it really got me super interested in football. And that's kind of why I've grown to love football more than anything else. You know, I would spend a lot of my weekends, you know, watching a high school game on Friday night. Like when my cousin Anthony was playing at Case, I would go watch my cousin Michael's game in Mayfield on Friday night and then go watch a Case game on Saturday. And right. then the Browns were on Sunday. So all your weekends in the fall are taken up by football. And then once I got to high school and Mike Canganelli was running the running back here at John Carroll, it'd be every Friday night I go to high school games for Ignatius. Every Saturday night or every Saturday afternoon I go watch a John Carroll game here at John Carroll. And then Sunday is for the Browns. But, you know, those role models in my life have played a big factor with me getting interested in sports. As far as broadcasting goes, I've had a different role model almost every single year that I've been broadcasting. I got involved with the SIBN over at St. Ignatius. That's one of the things that drew me to that school. You know, one of my big role models that got me in there was this guy who was named a 30 under 30 for the best broadcasters in the world. And it's a guy by the name of John Fanta, who's given himself a great career now, who started in that program.
Yeah.
And he was a big role model who I looked up to, and I've tried to emulate my game. Obviously, you grow up listening to Tom Hamilton every single game in the summer whenever you're in the car.
Yep.
You listen to the late, great Jim Donovan when you're, you know, running 10 minutes late to grandma's house to watch the Browns game that Sunday. So you get to catch Donovan and Deacon for a little bit. And of course, the late Fred McLeod, watching him call LeBron for, you know, all those years he was in Cleveland. That was my childhood. And those are the guys who I looked up to. But I know I'm drawing on a little long about this, Marcelo.
No.
But, you know, there's a big, long list of idols that I've had and role models that I've had. And some of them who I've known personally, some of them who I haven't. The three past ones I really don't know personally. But now, you know, once I got to St. Ignatius, the guy who started that program, who's grown his career tremendously, used to be a host in 92.3. Now he's the head sports writer for Sports Illustrated in Ohio.
Wow.
Brennan Gulick, a guy who I consider very close, who is, you know, I'll reach out to him every once in a while looking for some advice, and he's always there. You know, you move into other guys who I called games with back at St. Ignatius, who I was calling games with now. You know, Owen Gerba, Jack O'Rourke, you know, the Nick Fletcher, Kurt Pickering, you know, Zach Strom, all those guys, you know, I knew them personally. I learned from them and their style. And when you're getting your feet wet with broadcasting, you know, that helped a lot, having a guy who you could talk to about it when the mics are off. Joe Ginley, who's been a guy who, you know, sports information director at John Carroll, was the SIBN director at Ignatius, another reason why I came to Carroll. You know, he's played a big role as a mentor for me in my life in the past 8 years I've been working with him. And of course, when I've gotten here, Jason Sokol, the guy who runs this station, who's got me involved with so much more than just sports broadcasting. I'm not just the sports guy anymore. I have a music show at this station. I have, you know, I run a department now. I've, you know, gotten to do what I've wanted here. I've gotten to build up game day entertainment at our basketball games at Carroll, which I didn't think I'd be getting into event planning at some point in my life, but there we are. And then, you know, some of the guys who I've called the games with here, you know, starting off with Logan Petoskey, who was a sports director when I first walked in, the guy who used to have my role, you know, current play-by-play guy for the Lake County Captains, and he's starting off a great career. Then going over to Jake Volnick, who's currently, you know, one of the candidates for being the nighttime host of 92.3 The Fan, replacing Jonathan Pierlin.
Wow.
He's only a year older than me. You know, he was my co-director last year, and to see he's in that spot right now is insane. But, you know, being able to call games with him has been amazing. And of course, all the other people who I've worked with around here. This year has been the year where I'm a senior, and now I've kind of transitioned from being the guy who looks up to somebody else and he's coming up to now, okay, now there are people behind me coming in. So let's take a look at them. How can I develop them? But, you know, you gain all of that knowledge and experience from your role models growing up. And I have a lot to thank. And I have a lot of people in my life I deserve, you know, I probably didn't deserve in my life, who have been such great role models for me and have done so much for me in my career.
Wow. I mean, like, you have a huge group of role models. And yeah. I mean, that is like, that is awesome. You have so many people like to look up to, so many people to ask for advice. And also too, like, you know, they're there to help you and you learn from them. And then now, you know, you are helping your WJCU team, like, you know, for the future.
Yeah.
So like you're now in that role where you're helping out other people. You're, you know, seeing what talent you have. You're like, you may need those people for, you know, a job at,
definitely,
you know, a like radio station or definitely, even commentating somewhere. So I mean, the connections that you're making now are huge.
They are.
Big props to you for that, Bobby.
Yeah, well, and I owe a lot of thanks to them. And they're always guys who I know I can reach out to at any time, and they're going to pick up the phone. That's what I try to be to the people who are around here as well. You know, we have a lot of, we have a great sophomore class here at the radio station, here at WJCU right now. And it's funny because I'll look around at what they're going through, just getting their feet wet with broadcasting or, you know, little things are going on in their social lives outside of here. I'm like, oh, I remember being there at one time.
Yeah.
And then it's weird, but it's cool at the same time, looking down at them and saying, you know, and seeing, oh, wow, they're looking at me the same way I looked at Jake Volnick and the same way I looked at Logan Petoskey. I'm like, this is kind of weird to be in these shoes right now because I feel like I was just there like 2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
But now it's given me a lot of great experience and I've built a lot of great connections and, you know, obviously, professionally, these people have done a lot for me, but I consider all of them friends outside of, you know, our work that we've done together as well. So, you know, having those connections, making those friends, and, you know, every one of those guys has a busy schedule, but, you know, whenever we do get together, it's always a fun time.
Wow. And I mean, too, that says something about the, you know, the environment here in Cleveland. Cleveland gets a bad rap sometimes.
It does.
But, I mean, the people here, they love their city. They want to see others win. And also, too, you know, you can meet so many people here, and I guarantee you that they'll know someone that, you know, you have, like, some, like, mutual friend.
Right.
So, you know, just, like, being involved here in Cleveland, there's so much good to it. And, you know, it's hard to find that in a lot of places. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Here in Cleveland, you know, it's people treat each other here like family.
We look out for our own here. If you're a Cleveland guy and you're going up for a role against somebody who's from somewhere else and the guy who's hiring you is from Cleveland, he's going to give you the nod. You know, he's going to give you a fair shot. And if you know somebody from somewhere, it's these connections that you build that are going to go a long way. And it is something that's unique to Cleveland. I think there's an inherent culture here where you look out for somebody who's in your shoes at some point. You know, like everyone, if you're the newcomer in any role, whether it be for accounting or be for marketing or for engineering or a doctor or lawyer or whatever, or sports, the people at the top have been your shoes before, and they understand that. And I think that's built into our culture a little more here in Cleveland than it is anywhere else.
Yeah, true. So did you play any sports during your middle school or high school years? And if so, did you have any favorite memories from those moments?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was a four-year letterman all the time. Yeah. No. In middle school, I did play three sports. It was a continuation of the sports I loved in grade school. I went to Catholic grade school, so I was a big CYO athlete. I played travel baseball. I played CYO basketball and CYO football. I was in those years where three of the West Side schools, St. Brendan, St. Richard, St. Angela, St. Bernadette's, we were all combining for one football team. But then when basketball season rolled around, all of us played each other. And then, you know, the guys who you play on the same team with for football are the guys you're going up with in basketball. And like, oh, I got to guard my good friend here when I'm playing him. Usually I get dusted all the time in basketball, but here nor there. In middle school, I played baseball, basketball, football. In high school, I played football my freshman year, and you know, I went to St. Ignatius High School. There were 100 and some kids that went out for our freshman football team.
Yeah,
so
a ton.
When I say I played football my freshman year, I mean, like, I handed the towel or the water bottle to the Division I athlete who's going to go play at Cincinnati when he's coming off the field.
Hey, but you were still a part of the team.
I was still a part of the team.
You were still on the team. You still played.
The last time we ever put on a helmet and shoulder pad, I ever put on a helmet and shoulder pads, we beat St. Ed's on a game-winning field goal. So that's all that matters. I went out on top. But no, I played football at Ignatius my freshman year. The end of my freshman year, I got involved with the SIBN. I was interested in baseball. I wasn't good enough to make the team at Ignatius for baseball. I wasn't going to go out for basketball because, obviously, you know, you look at me, I'm not a basketball player. But I was always interested in doing broadcasting even before I went to high school. And baseball, I thought, was a sport that I'd be the best at. So I went out for a tryout for the SIBN. I got the role, and I started calling some baseball games over at Ignatius. And my plan was originally my freshman year I'm going to go play JV and then play varsity. I fell in love with broadcasting so much that I decided, well, take a look at my life right now. I love all the coaches. I still get a chance to talk with them for the football team. I used to have meetings with Chuck Kyle, Coach Restifo, and Coach Franziger every single week with them when I was broadcasting. But I still get to be involved with the program, but I don't need to spend 5 days a week after school, going up at practice every day, beating my body down. I get to do something I love while still being involved with the team and being friends with all the guys on the team. So that's how I got into broadcasting, and I kind of just rolled with it after that, and it opened the door for a lot. And it also gave me the opportunity to get a job and make some of my own money and buy a car when I was in high school. So it's, it opened up a lot of doors because I had that extra time, and the broadcasting, it really shaped the figure that I became when I was in high school. I've kind of been known for the last 8 years, both in high school and college, you're the guy who calls all the basketball games or the football games. And I'm like, yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah. Hey, well, listen, I mean, you kind of mentioned your start to the broadcasting career. So now talk a little bit about the sports writing, because I feel like sports writing is also a huge part. I mean,
yeah,
articles, you see ESPN, CBS, like everything. Articles are published every single day, nonstop, when there's a trade, when someone gets dropped. I mean, so talk a little bit about how you got into the world of sports writing.
So with writing, I was doing broadcasting my freshman and sophomore year. During my sophomore year, there's another opportunity where Joe Ginley came up to me and said, look, you have a lot of knowledge for these sports. I heard you have a pretty good English grade right now.
Like, no way.
You ain't doing great in a lot of other subjects, but you're doing all right in English. Why don't you start writing for the I, the school newspaper? So I got involved with writing there, and yeah, I became the head sports writer for the newspaper over at St. Ignatius when I was there. And I got to write about all of our football teams, the guys who I sat with in class. That was a good way of, keeping your friends on your good side. If they stayed on your good side, you would write a little, throw their name in an article somewhere, just find a way to do it.
Oh, but, yeah.
You got to play the game there sometimes, when you got to win brownie points in high school. But It was a lot to do, but I enjoy doing all of it, and it's communicating in a different form, so it's acceptable for readers. And I would write post-game recaps that would go up on our website over in high school all the time. There's still a bunch of stuff you could probably find online that still has my name on it that's in the archives. Every once in a while, I'll stumble upon something and I'll be like, oh, man, I forgot about writing that. I remember that day. But I also got to write a little bit about opinionated stuff. I loved watching SportsCenter growing up. I always wanted to be one of those guys. I got to be able to write about, some sporting events that happened specifically in the Cleveland area about the teams that I like watching. My best article that I wrote in high school was about the Myles Garrett slamming over Mason Rudolph with his helmet.
Wow.
I got a whole page in the paper about that, and I think online it got like over 300 or 400 clicks, which for a high school newspaper online, it's a lot of clicks.
It's pretty good.
You got to take the little wins where you can get them. But then, you come to college as well. I don't write for the Carroll News here at Carroll, but I do write some of the recaps for the sports information department upstairs, still with Joe Ginley. I still get to keep up with writing every once in a while. And a lot of my papers that I write in college, because there's a lot more in college than there is in high school, you get to write about stuff you like to watch, you like to do. So being able to write about some of these sports and incorporate that into, some theories that we're learning about in class, it's helped a lot. It builds up your writing skills, and it helped me out a lot in college.
That whole experience is great. I mean, like, I've always, like, wanted to write, like, you know, sports articles, but, you know, coming into, like, the podcast world, like, I've always done, like, YouTube, like, ever since I was little. Like, I'd post, like, Minecraft videos, like, like, when I was super little. So, you know, like, I've always loved reading those sports articles, but, you know, now, like, looking back, it's like, you know, maybe, like, this podcast thing was, you know, meant, like, to happen. It was just, like, you know, I love being around sports, love being around it, and eventually made my way to, the podcast. Obviously, you know, completely different than being a sports broadcaster. I mean, you're live in front of, you know, hundreds of people that are tuning in from around the world watching this. Me, I'm kind of just recording this, and then I could edit it, you know, and then post it. But, I mean,
luckily, I'm on a 10-second delay now with radio, so if I drop an F-bomb, it doesn't get picked up. But, you know, I'm grateful for that. But, yeah, it's tough to do, but I love doing it.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about your experience at St. Ignatius doing all this stuff, and then kind of transition it into today at John Carroll.
So that's where I got my starting ground to St. Ignatius. And part of the reasons why I wanted to go to St. Ignatius for high school was because they had this program. And there was a fifth grade report that I did where it was a tell me what you want to be when you grow up. And of course, you're in fifth grade. Everyone else is writing, I want to be Kyrie Irving. I want to be, who was a big Indians player back then? I want to be Carlos Santana. I want to be Nick Swisher. You know, I was a kid who said, well, I kind of want to be different from everyone else. So I kind of just pulled it out of my butt and said, sports broadcasting. I want to be the guy who calls all the games, because I don't think, I look around the room, nobody else wants to do it. So why don't I do it? Yeah. And then, you know, after doing that report, I did the report. My mom told me at St. Ignatius, they got this program there where you can actually call games. And I started listening to them, and I'm like, oh man, I really want to do this. I want to go to this school for that. So, you know, I got to give a lot of thanks to my parents. They made a big sacrifice sending me to that school. It's not cheap to go there. Yeah. And, you know, they scraped by this somehow to put me through that school, and I'm grateful for it, because I wouldn't have what I have today if it wasn't for the experience that I got at that school. But getting my starting ground at St. Ignatius, it meant a lot. I've been working in broadcasting with Joe Ginley for all 8 years that I've been doing it, and he's been a great mentor every step of the way. And he's the one who kind of got me interested in doing new things there. I got used to coming out of my comfort zone, expressing emotion on air. When you got to get really energetic when a big play happens,
yeah,
it's, you know, not everyone is comfortable doing that. So it's, you know, getting used to doing that and getting used with being uncomfortable and just being able to think quick off the top of your head, because some crazy stuff can happen in a game. You don't know that pitcher just balked, but you got to be able to fill some time there because you can't just stop talking. So being able to pick up on that skill, it's made me a better thinker in my life today. And usually in my friend group, I'm one of the guys who has the quick idea right away. So, and I credit a lot of it to that. But then picking up a little bit of a skill for broadcasting in high school, I was not a great broadcaster in high school by any means. I'm a much better broadcaster now than I was then. But it gave me a training ground for how to handle myself and knowing how to conduct myself on air when I got to college. And now being on an actual radio station rather than a web stream that is, you know, five clicks onto a website to somehow find it.
Yeah.
Being on an actual radio station where you just turn your car on and there it is, you know, I've been ready for it. You know, and I've only improved on my ability to do this. And this isn't something that I'm going to go into as a professional career. But it's something that I would like to do on the side. And if, you know, I end up being like the Cavs broadcaster now and calling high school football games to then, you know, getting a lucky break and then becoming the Cavs guy in 20 years, I'm not going to be mad at that at all. But every stage of my life with broadcasting specifically has prepared me well for the next one.
Wow. Well, listen, Bobby, I could definitely see you as a Cavs announcer easily within like five years. I mean, come on.
I wish, you know, hey. I hope you're right. That'd be a great honor to have, but you know, I'm not getting ahead of myself there. I'm happy with what I got now.
Yeah.
Obviously, going into this as a career, it's tough to do. It's one of the most competitive fields in all of, getting into sports period is tough to do because it's super competitive and the pay isn't, the best in the world. You could be working for a corporate company for a lot more money. So my plan, Cleveland's a great market for high school sports. We're one of the best high school football markets in the entire country.
Yeah.
Same thing with Division III college. That's what we're doing now. There's a big Division III college market. And Division III college football doesn't get a lot of attention, but we get it in this area. Being able to still call those games and there being opportunities, not every high school has a broadcasting department like St. Ignatius does. So for those schools that need broadcasters, need their games covered, there's a market for it. Why don't I jump in and do that? So that's going to be my plan, probably until I have a kid or something like that and I don't have time for it anymore. But it'll be a fun road for hopefully another 10 years.
Yeah. Hey, well, listen, I can't wait to be a part of that journey and watch it all unfold. I know that it's going to be great.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
So talk about your first call at John Carroll, your first experience broadcasting a game. And what was it like, stepping into that role?
So my first ever game at John Carroll was a men's basketball game in December of my freshman year here. I was involved with sports information, and WJCU was this, they were kind of these guys in the basement who I really didn't know that much about, but I knew a couple of the guys that also worked in sports info with me, so I was cool with them. And then Logan Petoskey, the guy who's the play-by-play commentator for the Lake County Captains, who was a junior at the time, reached out to me and said, "Hey, I need a color commentator for Wednesday night's game. Do you want to be the guy?" And I'm like, "Oh crap! I didn't think I would be going down there. I think I'd be ready for a college broadcast yet because I'm still like this average high school guy." But I threw on a headset, got on air. Him and I took a picture together before the game that ended up being my profile picture on Instagram up until literally last night. It's been my profile pic for 3 years.
Right.
Me with this big, goofy, pasty face and a headset on. it was a fun game that I got to call. And then, meeting some of the people down here before and after the game, being able to come to the studio once and, seeing how everything's done here, it got me really interested in continuing to do radio. So I took a radio boot camp class. I started broadcasting more games for WJCU. I started getting play-by-play roles later on in the season. I got to call my first ever John Carroll football game as a sophomore and ended up being a broadcast against Marietta where Logan and I were on air again. I was his color guy, and that broadcast alone won an award for the Intercollegiate Broadcasting Systems for the best sports play-by-play and color broadcast of the entire year in the entire United States for college radio. So, my first ever time doing that, I felt like I was on top of the world. Oh, one broadcast, I'm the man now. I got this big award. But it was a big process, getting to where I am today. And it all had a starting ground. I was a nervous kid coming into college. Yes, I was familiar with behind a mic because I've done it before coming into college, but still new environment, new people you have to impress, new people you have to meet and, win over. It's always a little bit intimidating. But, we were able to manage, and I've grown into a better professional because of it.
Yeah, listen, being behind a mic is not easy.
No.
It is. It's hard. Even, doing, a podcast like this, it's like, all right, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I know 2 weeks ago, one of my best friends joined a podcast episode, and unfortunately, the audio just got screwed up kind of towards the end, so I wasn't able to post it, and then the file got lost, and it's like, oh no, it just turns into this whole thing. But being behind a mic, you really have to get prepared for it. You have to get in the zone, and also too, it takes a lot of energy. Kind of like you mentioned earlier, because it's hard to when a big dunk happens to stand up, get everyone fired up,
right?
Because you kind of set that tone for everything else. The one Hornets announcer, he's the best. His play calls, his just the way he says things, it is awesome. It gets the fans fired up. It gets people to tune into those games at night.
Well, and you learn with the broadcaster as well. If you're a play-by-play guy, you create the emotion for your listener, especially if you're on radio, because they can't see what's going on. But TV as well. Imagine listening or watching a big LeBron dunk or that LeBron block in the 2016 NBA Finals. Mike Breen's sitting there. He's going, you know, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. You know, yeah, that big energetic reaction. You felt that as a fan, and you jumped out of your seat when you saw that. Imagine if that play happened and Mike Breen's sitting there, Curry back to Iguodala, and James blocks it on the other end. And, like, yeah, it sucks all the energy out of one of the biggest moments in NBA history. And,
right,
you know, you are that emotion. So being able to balance that on top of getting each play right when you call it, on top of, you know, all the prep work that goes in as well. Like, you know, when there's a timeout taken or when LeBron's on the free throw line, you mention that moment like, oh, it's his kid's 12th birthday today. You know, somebody had to look that up. You know, yeah, he's got 12 points on the day. He said, I'm coming out today and I'm playing for my son because he's going to be sitting in the front row. You know, like, or some story like that.
Yeah.
You find those little nooks and crannies from your research online. There's, people don't realize there's, like, for one single broadcast, there's at least 4, 5, maybe 6 hours of work the day before that you got to put in to make that sound good and get those little nooks and crannies in. And 95% of that material that you build up, you don't use on a broadcast. But when you do use it, it's worth a lot and it means a lot, and the listeners remember that. So, you know, it's conveying the emotion, balancing all of your prep work on top of it, knowing the sport itself, and then also being able to talk about it. I mean, there have been a million times where I've lost my voice for a day after I've called a game just because, yeah, of how energetic it's gotten. But that happens, and being able to manage your vocal cords on top of it, you know, I never thought I'd be working out my vocal cords. You know,
really?
Would you think when you were in high school, like, and going to the gym and lifting every day, that you'd be doing vocal cord practices? I'm like, no, I'm not some opera singer. Like,
wow.
they do that. I don't. But now, like, your voice isn't going to make it unless you do some of those exercises. So, you know, there have been times where I've looked myself in the mirror on a night, like a Tuesday night, where I'm not doing anything. I'm like, I got to practice getting up and going down. And, you know, you get energetic and you tone it down and try to project your voice, not yell so you don't lose it, but also sound energetic at the same time. You're balancing all of it. It's tough to do, but that's a lot of the stuff that people don't think about when they think about just broadcasting. You know, it's maybe when you first begin, it's just pulling up and calling a game to the best way, the best of your ability, but once you become, you know, more experienced and professional at it, and you're trying to sound good and, you know, competing with other people for it, you have to put in that work or else you're not going to make it.
Right, right. So in May of 2023, you stepped into the role of sports director here at WJCU. So how has that transition been, and how have you adapted to managing a larger role while still doing your commentary?
So this was one of my big points that I've made when I was interviewing for this job. And one of the things that's been reflected by our GM, Jason Sokol, over here, the sports director role doesn't go to the best play-by-play broadcaster. And I'd be the first one to admit, like, for majority of my time at Carroll, I've not been the best play-by-play guy at the school. You know, Jake Volnick is a much better play-by-play guy than me. Logan Petoskey is doing it professionally now. Of course, he's a much better play-by-play guy than me. And those guys paved the road for me to be where I am now.
Yeah.
But that role of sports director doesn't go to the best play-by-play guy. It goes to the best leader who's capable of, you know, leading a department, managing a staff. You got to go into these spreadsheets and write up a schedule and make sure everyone's filling out their availability. And, you know, we got, I think, a staff of 12 people now. I got to make sure all those people get their reps. You know, I can't be hogging play-by-play for every single game at John Carroll. You know, I've got to be able to take a step back and have other people do that, or else people are going to walk away because, well, you're not giving me the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and managing all of that on top of, you know, training other people to become good at broadcasting, that's part of what being a leader is, you know, in this department, and trying to be that role model for other people. You know, that's all factored into it. Everything that we do, you have to sit through meetings with the rest of the people at this station and learn about all the music stuff that's going on, or the social media stuff and the production stuff and the promotions and events, all of that. You know, every 2 weeks, you got an hour meeting with this entire department on a Monday night, and your Monday night's booked because of that. And you're planning events together. You're in charge of fundraising for a radiothon that we do every single year. You get put in charge of a lot more stuff that most of the time it isn't really sports. It's administrative stuff. But for me, a guy who's going into marketing, going into business, who wants to be a leader in whatever field I go into, this is great experience for that. You know, this is my co-op that I have at a Fortune 500 in Cleveland now is I got it because of the work I've done here, not because of anything I've learned in the classroom, but as sports director, all the administrative stuff that I've done, that's what's gotten me that job. And it's much different from just being the guy who calls the games. You know, it's so much more. You got to live and breathe this role. And it's a lot of time and a lot of effort, but when you do it with people you love, when you do it with something you love doing, you don't work a day doing it.
Right.
Some days are better than others, obviously. Any leader knows that. I mean, every decision you make impacts everyone. It's like the Tony Soprano line. You know, you got no effing clue what it's like to be the one who calls the shots. You know? But, you know, it's like that line sometimes, but it's valuable experience that I think sets you apart from a lot of other candidates when you're applying for jobs when you're out of college. And, you know, everything happens for a reason. And while I've put myself through a lot of long weeks where I haven't had a lot of time to, you know, go spend time with my friends or have the best social life out of anyone in college, it's been a lot of work, but I've loved doing the work. And, you know, I'm forever thankful for it. And I have no regrets with doing anything around here. But I've loved being the sports director here.
Wow. Awesome. I mean, kind of like on top of that, talk about how important time management is for you.
Because incredibly.
I mean, it is insane how you are doing all of this stuff. I mean, kind of like how you mentioned, you know, it's hard. You know, you're doing this stuff. You know, you could be spending time with, you know, friends, family, doing other things outside of it. But you know what? Instead you're here, you're balancing all of your time out. You know, you have meetings.
Well,
it's a lot.
And you're in college. I mean, Thursday night's a big go hang out night for kids in college.
Yeah.
So there have been Thursday nights where I've had to say to my friends, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it tonight. Like, you balance your schoolwork on top of, you know, any jobs that you have because, you know, maybe you're not getting paid with the stuff that you love doing as extracurriculars on top of the stuff that you love doing, and then your social life on top of it. And we didn't mention sleep. You got to make sure to get your 8 hours in every night, too. So you got to sacrifice something sometimes. It's prioritizing, you know, what's the most important thing at this time for me. And that varies all the time. But there have been Thursday nights where I've, you know, not gone out because, hey, I got schoolwork that needs to get done. Like, I've been putting this off all week because I've been busy, and this is my only time to do it. So, sorry, but I got to get this done. There have been Friday nights where, hey, I'm doing play-by-play for a John Carroll football game tomorrow, and the game starts at noon. I can't be going out to a bar on Friday night and being all hungover on a game the next day, and, you know, your voice is going to sound horrible. Everyone's going to know that you sound hungover when you're on air. There have been broadcasters who have been drunk or hungover on air before, and they've lost their jobs because of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's – you have to physically be 100% with it when you're on air. So it's the prep going into that, too. Like, yeah, it's balancing all of that. It's – time management means everything. But you – it also helps you because you – when you get to be an adult, when you have kids, when you have, you know, your whole life going on – you're going to be planning everything 2-3 weeks in advance. You know, I'm becoming an old man. I, you know, think people consider me as mentally a lot older than I actually am. And, you know, people at the station still joke around and say, oh, you're a big grandpa around here now. You're a whole big age of 22 years old and you're the grandpa around here. I'm getting it from all these 19-year-old kids. But they... you know, it helps you. It preps you for the future, and I'm going to be ready for whatever comes my way in the future because you're able to plan a week in advance. And you look at your schedule a week in advance, and you say, okay, I wasn't able to hang out with my friends this week, but hey, I've made a schedule to where this person who needs an opportunity is calling play-by-play on Saturday, and I'm not on air that day. So maybe Friday night's my night where I can, you know, structure my whole week around I'm going out that night with my friends. So, yeah. Like, it's time management. It's, you know, being able to oversee your entire schedule during a week and, you know, being able to give some time for yourself as well. Balancing all of it, it's a challenge, but once you get the hang of it and once you get used to it, and it wasn't easy at first, but once you get the hang of it and you get into a rhythm, you're thanking yourself in the future. Because a lot of people don't understand that until they get into their 30s.
Right. And I mean, even going back to like sleep, I realize how important sleep is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even in high school, I'd probably go to bed at like 3 a.m., wake up at like 8, and I was fine. Or wake up at 7 or 6, I was fine. Now it's like, okay, like I have to go to bed, hopefully by at least like midnight, have to finish homework, have to wash dishes, do all that, and then wake up by, you know, 8, go to class, eat, make, you know, food, do all that stuff, clean the house. I mean, it is, like, there's also, like, a lot of stuff outside of school and work that, like, you have to do. So time management is truly key.
Right. And the three things that you balance when you're in college mainly are your work life, which is whatever jobs you have, whatever extracurriculars you have, and obviously school. Your social life, because it's very important in college. I mean, we're a bunch of kids who are here together for 4 years. So you're going to work something with your social life. And then sleep, because everyone forgets about sleep. But usually, roughly, those should be broken down into 8 hours each day for each one of those things. You know, 8 hours with your friends, 8 hours in school doing your work, you know, maybe you're 3 hours in class, and then 5 hours doing all your work and stuff like that. And then you got to get your 8 hours of sleep a night, too. But sometimes it fluctuates where, okay, I got all this stuff going on. Maybe I'm only getting 5 hours of sleep tonight. But, you know, it's balancing all of that. It means a lot. When you're able to find that balance, you're clicking on all cylinders.
Locked in. So what's been your favorite broadcasting moment at John Carroll so far? And do you use any key phrases or techniques that you feel differentiate your style from others?
You know, the criticism that I've gotten before is that I say momentum and talk about momentum all the time when I'm on air.
But no way.
I'm a big believer in describing to the listener, this is how the game's going right now. Like, John Carroll was in this spot where they were struggling 5 minutes ago, but we just went on a run, and like a Luke Frazier or Luke Chacon hit a three, and now we're in a timeout, and now it's only a 3-point game, and the momentum is in favor of the Blue Streaks. Can they come out of this timeout hot? So, you know, that's how I always try to, when I'm in color commentary, I always try to put myself in the head of the coach, and I think that makes it a lot easier to bring up whatever point you're going to bring up next. So, like, coming out of this timeout, if I'm Coach Moran or if I'm Coach Behrman, you know, I'm, you know, the run game's been working, but they're loading up the box. So you got to go quick play action, heave it downfield to Montgomery. Or if, you know, the Blue Streaks have been on a hot run on the interior, they're going to be doubling up the center on the inside when they work the ball down low. Work it outside, get an open jumper. So for color, you know, that's always what helps. For play-by-play, you know, I've been told I'm very energetic. My one big strong suit is that the energy that I bring to a broadcast is what differentiates me. And I, you know, the three big people in my time here, the three main play-by-play guys in my years here have been Logan Potoski, Jake Volnick, and myself. Jake Volnick has by far the best voice that you could ever find with a broadcaster. If you listen to him on 92.3 The Fan, he's got that really deep voice, and I can't even do a good impersonation of it. He's got a super deep voice, perfect for broadcasting. It doesn't matter what he says, it sounds good coming out of his mouth. So that's his big strong suit. I obviously don't have that. Logan Potoski has a higher pitch voice too, but his prep work is what differentiates him, and his ability to just, you know, think off the cuff and always have the right thing to say at the right moment is what differentiates him, and that's his strongest suit. For me, it's usually the thing that I've been complimented about is capturing the emotion of whatever is going on in the game and being able to have the listener at home feel the same emotion that they would if they were sitting in the front row at a football or a basketball game. So, you know, being able to get energetic when that big moment comes, being able to, you know, maybe tone it back when it's a tough loss for us. You know, that's, you know, we got to put this one behind us. And, you know, you go on saying about, you know, talk about all those things. It's the emotion I think separates me. My favorite broadcast at John Carroll, I'm going to divide it up into play-by-play and color.
All right.
My favorite color commentary game ever was the OAC Championship last year for John Carroll playing Mount Union on a Saturday afternoon in February. Nobody's doing anything on a Saturday afternoon in February, so everyone's at that game. It's a whiteout. It felt like a D1 game. It was the loudest I've ever heard that gym. You know, I've been in Division I gyms before that have sounded less loud than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were a team that Mount Union, they beat us last year. We split the series with them. They were a heated rival with us, and you know, we went into two overtimes, and being able to capture everything in that game, it was super fun. And Jake Volnick had a great game doing play-by-play. I had a great game caller. I still think that's the best broadcast that I ever was on in my time at John Carroll, regardless of the role. Even though that broadcast didn't win any national awards like some previous ones, I still think that's the best one that I've ever been on. For play-by-play, my favorite one was Mount St. Joseph football this past year, my second last football game that I ever did play-by-play for at John Carroll. So it was the first time that John Carroll had even made the playoffs since 2018.
Wow.
The last playoff game that John Carroll made was at John Carroll against Randolph-Macon in 2018. I was at the game because Kanganelli was the running back. We had, I think, a 10-point lead at halftime. Just like every year, my cousin's hamstring gave out, and you know, we made fun of him for it all day because he blew the game for the entire team and ruined the hopes of everyone at John Carroll. So, you know, the whole community was really let down because of him, and we still let him hear about that today. But we ended up blowing that game and lost in the first round, and Mount St. Joseph was the first time we made a playoff appearance since 2018, first time we've had a home playoff game since 2018, and also the first win that we had in the playoffs since 2016 when you know, Tom Arth and Brandon Staley at the defensive coordinator took John Carroll to the Final Four and beat Mount Union for the first time in like 30 years, which was a magical season. So I got to call a piece of history for John Carroll. In the expanded playoff format, they made the playoffs. It was a very fun team to watch. And, you know, the commentary itself was the best I've done all season. You know, another thing that you don't talk about a lot when it comes to commentary is the chemistry you have with your partner on air. So Jake Volnick and I called a lot of games last year. I had to know his style at play-by-play, so I knew when to work in my points and color, and I knew what he liked to talk about, so I wanted to feed into that. And we both wanted to compliment each other on air. Now I transition to my role where I was the main play-by-play guy for football this year, and my main color commentator this year was Nicolina Samak, who was my co-director over here, who helped out with the Summer Classic last year.
Yeah.
You know, and your broadcast that you have with your partner week one is not the same as the one from week 10. Like, you know, Jake and I, the first time we called a game together, didn't have the best chemistry in the world because we were still, it takes a couple of games to figure out what each other is like, you know, what the other one is like on air and how to feed off of that. Same thing with Nicolina and I, you know, our week one broadcast on the road in Whitewater, Wisconsin, you know, there were times where there were dead spots for like 4 or 5 seconds because the other one, you know, we were both looking at each other like, oh, you going to say something here? Am I going to say something here? Who's talking here?
Yeah.
But by the time Mount St. Joseph hit, you know, the chemistry was there. We knew how each other operated on air. I knew the points that she was thinking of making whenever a play happened. She knew what I was going to say before I even said it. And because you have that chemistry on air, it makes it a whole lot easier. So the broadcast sounded amazing. It was an electrifying game. The second quarter was my favorite quarter I've ever called because we went on, I think we got in a span of 5 minutes of game time or maybe 8 minutes of game time, we got like 3 touchdowns, 2 turnovers, like 2 sacks, a blocked punt. And it was crazy stuff happening. And what was a, I think, 7-3 or 14-3 game at the end of the first quarter ended up becoming a, I think we had 40 points on the board at halftime just because of that crazy amount of events that happened. And we hit every single one of those points, you know, because when you have a blocked punt and you're on radio, it's tough to explain that to somebody who's not watching it and seeing what's happening, but you need to be able to explain it so they understand it.
Yeah.
So, and we hit every single one of those points. We were crisp. And right now we submitted that for a potential Broadcast Educators Association Award. I hope it gets nominated. Fingers crossed. But
hey,
that was the my favorite broadcast I've had at Carroll, for sure.
Wow. Awesome. I mean, going back first to the word momentum. I mean, that is that has been my word, you know, since New Year's. I was like, listen, momentum is like the word to like describe 2025 because life happens, right? It's ups and downs. There's a lot of stuff happening. It's like a game of basketball. You know, one team's up, oh no, then they start to come back, then they're up again. So it's like, you know, the change in momentum is just huge. And the one thing that you want to do in life is you want to carry that with you. So if you have the momentum, you want to continue that. Even at times the momentum may slow up. You want to keep pushing through, keep on going forward, and the momentum is still on your side. So, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was telling, I think yesterday on FaceTime, I was telling, like, my parents that. I'm like, listen, we always try to come up with, like, one word to describe the year. I think last year, I think we said it was, like, the, like, statement year.
Yeah.
This year, it's the momentum year. It's all about the momentum.
Right. Build up the momentum, be able to carry it with you. And when you look at momentum, like I said, for a basketball or a football broadcast, you talk about momentum of the game, you're able to describe why we got here in the first place. You're able to describe what happened that gives you the logical thinking for the decisions that you're about to make going forward. And I think that applies to your life, too.
Yeah.
I mean, in your personal life, regardless of what you do, you're going to be in situations where you're going to ask, how the hell did I get here? You know, why am I here right now? And what do I do going forward based on what's happened in the past? So, you know, I think that being able to analyze that, being able to kind of embrace that term and everything that, you know, the meaning behind it, it means a lot, you know. And I get made fun of a little bit because there's one high school broadcast that I was on that in the second half of a football game in the playoffs, it was against Drew Aller.
When
we were playing Drew Aller and he knocked us out of the playoffs, he threw for, I think, 550 yards and 6 touchdowns. It was a bad game.
Wow.
But I said momentum. We almost made a comeback at the end. I think I said the word momentum 16 times in the second half of that broadcast. And one of my teachers came up to me in class on Monday and he was like, "You called a good season." I'm not going to lie. My buddies and I, because it was during COVID, we had nothing to do, so we were in my garage playing drinking games. Every time you said momentum, you know, we were throwing one back, and I was pretty loaded that night.
Oh,
I'm
my
like,
gosh.
I can't believe I'm hearing this from a Catholic high school teacher right now.
Wow.
But, you know, it is. It momentum means a lot.
Yeah. And also, too, going back to that Mount game, you had, like, a, like, famous reaction to it, right?
We had a famous reaction to that. It was the first time, which made us make the decision for every game going forward, we're putting a camera on ourselves. We had a big reaction to a Luke Frazier dunk on one end, another player from Mount with a big, like, he, you know, jumped over two guys and laid down a dunk on the other end.
Wow.
And then 5 seconds later, it was Luke Frazier again who hit, like, a 35-foot three from almost mid-court, and the whole place is just going crazy. You know, everyone goes nuts for this big dunk. Then on the other end, right away, you know, the whole place goes silent for another 5 seconds, and then the whole place gets up and crazy again after a three, and then a timeout's forced to be taken. And we're both losing our voices over that. But, yeah, it looked like Joe Rogan with that one meme you see with the UFC fights.
Yeah.
I'm wearing the black quarter zip, too, so I look kind of like him, and I got that big egghead like he does. So, you know, I'm throwing my arms back. I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on? And, yeah, that was a big moment we put on ourselves. That was a video that got very popular. Nick Wilson ended up retweeting that.
Wow.
And it was Jake worked with him in 92.3, but my uncle, who isn't on social media at all, throws into the family group chat the next day, "Oh, my God, that's Bobby Jerome off of a Nick Wilson tweet online." I'm like, how are you finding this?
Wow.
But, yeah, that one blew up. We also, after the one time you'll see a Division III college storm the court at the end of that OAC championship game, we filmed that. We filmed our audio of the call over the video. And we put the Celine Dion, "My Heart Will Go On" behind it.
Oh, my gosh.
And with all the fans rushing the court. And then at the end, you know, Jake gives his, you know, "For the first time, blah, blah, blah. You know, we are OAC champions." And then I go on to give my big, "What a game. This is the biggest statement win that John Carroll's had forever. And for the first time in 5 years, they can call themselves OAC champions." And it was perfect audio. And that video itself got, I think, over 20,000 views on Instagram.
Wow.
On Instagram alone, it got over 100 reshares, and it got put on so many people's stories because every student who was in that section who stormed the court ended up putting that on their story the next day because, "Oh, look, Mom, there I am."
Yeah.
And all the players loved it, too. And, you know, that's also, you get that recognition online. the players start to notice you as well. So now, you know, right before the game start, you'll have a couple of players walk up to you and fist bump you at the table because they know you're going to make them sound good. And, you know, you might get a moment that makes them go viral on social media. But that was a fun moment last year. That was a crazy moment. And, yeah, that's why my stupid face gets put on a camera for every single game now. You can tell I have a face for radio every single time you look at one of those videos.
Hey, well, listen, that is truly a moment that you will never, ever forget.
No, never.
That was awesome. But within the past few weeks, you were named the 2024 ISBC runner-up for best sports play-by-play broadcaster in the world.
In the world.
I mean, yeah. First off, congrats, my brother, and truly well-deserved. I mean, this is incredible. Saw it on the LinkedIn post, too.
Oh, yeah.
So what does that accomplishment mean to you? I mean, all of your hard work truly paid off for this moment. I mean, in the world is truly amazing.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. To be flat out honest with you, that was the most competitive entry for that awards organization. I think there were over 400 entries for that award from across the world, and it's all from college media, and it's for every single sport. So it's not even, you know, there are other awards organizations that break it down by sport. Like, okay, this is the best football call from this past year. This is the best basketball call. Or this is the best men's basketball, and this is the best women's basketball. They even break it down to that. This was just for the not only for this country, but for the entire world. It was, you know, best play-by-play, period. And the fact that I got runner-up for that, the fact that I was even a finalist or considered to be a finalist was a huge honor. Runner-up was insane. And I learned afterwards, the guy who won it was from Canada, from Montreal. So
wow.
I can call myself the best in the U.S. for it. So
yeah,
that's
hey,
all that.
Hey.
Wait, I can call myself a national champion. I'm not a world champion, but I'm a national. But I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, and this is an organization that I got involved with where, you know, like I said, I wasn't a high school athlete. I wasn't, you know, the big overachiever in the classroom at high school. You know, I was never going to be a valedictorian. This is one of the few things that I've done where somebody has looked at you and said, like somebody who does it professionally has looked and said, hey, you got a talent for this. Like, good work. And, you know, hearing that, getting, honestly, in my LinkedIn or Instagram DMs after getting that, I got DMs from guys who are super high profile in this, you know, who I have had mutual connections with, or, you know, this guy knows a guy, or, you know, reposted it. Getting these random people who I don't, you know, I didn't think knew me that well saying, hey, congratulations on this. I listened to you a few times this year. You sounded good. And, like, that part of it meant a lot more than the award itself. We say around here, it's a big saying, because WJSU's won a lot of awards in the last couple of years. We were just named the best, by the same organization for ISBC, we were named the best college radio station in the world,
wow.
Which is insane. You know, we always say around here, awards don't lead, they follow. You don't do what you do around here so that you can win an award. You do what you do to the best of your ability so you can give yourself the most enjoyable experience and the best future going forward. And if you have that mentality, the awards take care of themselves. You know, if same thing with sports. You know, obviously everyone wants to win a championship at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But you want to be the best player you can be tonight. You want to be the best player that you want to be the best teammate you can be tonight. You know, you want to put in the work to be the best possible version of yourself when you're on the floor or on the field. And if you are the best and you take care of yourself and you make yourself the best version of yourself, the awards are going to handle themselves.
Yeah.
Because, well, I'm putting in more work than everyone else. Why would I not get this? So this meant a lot to me. You know, I've been broadcasting for 8 years. I'm not a guy who's won a ton of these awards in the past. The award that I won my freshman year, or sophomore year rather, with Logan was Best Football Play-by-Play in America. I was the color guy for that. I was incredibly honored to be on the air for that and be a contributor for that. But, you know, Logan was the guy who was the face, and, you know, props to him because he deserved that. But, you know, for this being solely in my name, that this is the first time I've gotten one solely in my name where it was for my play-by-play, because I've been used to being that color guy for forever. And the fact that I was able to get that this year, you know, right before I head out was, you know, it was a cherry on top for everything I've done around here. And, you know, it meant the world to me.
Wow. I mean, Bobby, truly well-deserved. I mean, like, hearing you since freshman year, I mean, like, you are incredible, bro. Like, it's, like, you are truly, like, incredible.
So I appreciate that.
So this, I mean, I'm just so, like, happy for you because it's the first time, like, my name is, like, on this award. I mean,
yeah.
that's got to be one of the greatest feelings, like of all time.
Yeah, and, you know, because the station won the big award, the people who judge these awards are from an organization in Australia. So
wow, Australia?
Yes, Australia. Australia is where these awards are, is where the headquarters are for these awards. And their tradition is that they go to the winning station every single year and physically present the award. So we got these people from Australia in April who are going to be flying over to Cleveland, Ohio to present this award to some college radio station. And I'm going to get to meet these people who are internationally known for their work in radio. So it's going to be really cool meeting them. And, you know, I try to stay as humble as possible through all of this. I'm not going to be a guy who goes up there and says, you know, I'm the sole guy who did all of this. I am, you know I'm the best. I'm the big, you know, I'm usually the guy who will say, I'm not the best play-by-play guy at this station right now. I don't know how I won that in the first place, you know. But I got to give a lot of thanks to the people who have helped me get there, you know. And I rattled off a lot of names earlier, but
yeah.
A big thank you goes to my role models that I've had. Joe Ginley, who first got me involved with this. My parents, who have been encouraging. You know, Jason Sokol, who's given me so many opportunities here to really take this role and do what I've wanted with it and let me drive the car on my own. To Nicolina Samak, who was my color commentator for the game that got nominated and, you know, got runner-up. She's been awesome color commentator and one of the best broadcast partners that you could ask for. Aiden Hauk, a guy who has also been one of my broadcast partners, who's been amazing to call games with, and who's he's worked his butt off at this station left and right this entire year. And, you know, I'm forever grateful for the stuff that he does. And he's like one of my best friends outside of here as well. And to everyone else who's helped me get there, obviously, Loka Petoskey, Jake Volnick for showing me the way before here. To Brennan Gulick, a guy who, you know, I don't talk to him a ton, but whenever I do, he'll give me some knowledge that I'm like, oh, okay, now I know exactly what to do going forward. And he's the guy who kind of inspired me to take a business route in college, but also try to do this radio thing and keep it as a side hustle. And maybe it becomes a career, maybe it doesn't, but you'll be happy either way.
Yeah.
So getting that advice from him, you know, and there's so many other people who I'm not mentioning right now, because if I kept going on, Marcelo, this podcast would be probably 5 hours long. But you know, there's a lot of thanks that goes to everyone who's helped me get here. Everyone who I've ever called a game with in the past. When I think I've called a game with over 50 people in my 8 years, 50 different people. So regardless of my role. So I owe a lot of thanks to everyone who's helped me get there, because this isn't a testament to what I did this year. This isn't a testament to one game where I had a really good call. You know, this was my entire broadcast career, my entire sports career leading up to this. You know, I wouldn't have been there if I didn't know the sport beforehand. I learned that growing up as a kid from my family. Getting my feet wet with broadcasting, you go back and listen to my high school broadcasts, they sound pretty awful. Some of my first broadcasts, they sound awful, which everyone who's a newcomer always does. And then, you know, having that trial and error and building up to that, you know, it's not just that one moment. It's everything that led up to it.
Wow. Truly, truly a blessing for sure.
It's an incredible blessing. And, you know, I'm incredibly humble but incredibly gracious that I've gotten the honor with this. You know, I don't think for a college kid it gets much better than that.
Yeah. I mean, especially with the cherry on top too.
Yeah. It's especially awesome. With the cherry on top.
So in June of 2024, you and your team commentated the fourth annual Cello Summer Showdown. What was that experience like for you, and did it exceed your expectations?
Definitely exceeded my expectations, 1,000%. You know, it's funny. Sometimes the conference championship or NCAA playoff game that you call isn't as fun as the, you know, the trip to the rec center where you're just hanging out with a couple of guys and, you know, you're just BSing around with some of the calls that you're making.
Yeah.
That was some of the most fun that I've ever had with a microphone in front of me.
Really?
At Solo Summer Showdown. Yeah. It was incredibly fun being able to go out there with the people who I brought out with me. So I got to roll through another list again. Obviously, my roommate Trevor Polomsky, who's great at some of his content that he makes around here. I mentioned Nicolina Samak a couple of times. She made the trip out for that. Evan Richwalski, who was a big producer for WJCU, also a guy who I've called games with before, making that trip out. You know, he's a guy who made the trip out from Avon to go call those.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm like, oh man, you know, thank you for coming out for this. you know, I'm incredibly grateful for them for taking time out of their day to do that. They had a fun time doing it as well. And, you know, they walked away from that saying, I feel a little more confident and in just off-the-cuff broadcasting, you know, because there are some environments where some people didn't get a start in high school like I did, where they don't get, you know, for college games, it's easy to do your prepper because the rosters and the stats are already made for you online. They're public information. I've called JV football games before where I don't know who the quarterback is on the team that we're playing, and I just have to call him number 13 for the entire four-hour game. But, you know, getting that experience, you know, in a low-pressure environment, it's all about reps for how you get good at broadcasting. And it's another rep in the summer when in college we don't have games going on.
Yeah.
So it, for the broadcasting experience, it meant a lot for us. You did a lot more for us than you think you did with you know, putting on this whole event. I got to give big props to you. You put on one hell of a show over there. You know, I'm very impressed with the work that you put in to get that done. And I look forward to calling it again. I'm going to be showing up for that again next year or this upcoming year. Now it's 2025. So, you know, be prepared. We're bringing it back.
Yeah.
We're bringing it back better than ever. But to wrap that all up, I got to give a big shout out to Special Sports. Obviously, you and I, one of our big connections that we had outside of here that we didn't know until I agreed to come call games with you, was that we had a mutual connection with the Bakus family. And, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bakus, Tony and Mindy Bakus, are the two of the best people in the world. You know, my dad and your dad have both been friends with Mr. Bakus for almost their entire lives. You couldn't ask for a better family to work with, and you couldn't ask for a better organization to raise money for and have a good cause for than Special Sports. You know, being around families who have had, you know, a special needs child in their family, they don't have as many opportunities as, you know, a kid who doesn't have special needs growing up. And playing organized sports is a tough thing because, you know, not only is it going to take a little longer for them to learn the sport, but it's going to take, you know, more effort for them to get good at it. And the fact that they provide an opportunity for these kids to have fun and to be able to collaborate with each other and make friends with kids who are like them, you know, it's incredible. And a, you know, big thank you for all that they do. And for any listeners who don't know about Special Sports, go look them up online, Special Sports in Cleveland. You know, if there's any organization, any charity that, you know, I would consider donating to, it's that one. And giving these kids an opportunity to have fun just like everyone else. I know it means being able to commentate the summer showdown and help raise a little money for it and advertise it a little, it's the least I could do. And it couldn't be a better family running that in the Bakus family. But, you know, I'm looking forward to running it back again this year. It's going to be a ton of fun. And the group of guys over there playing, also amazing.
Yeah, you have F-150. You have
Dom. F-250.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
F-250.
That's right. You have a Dom G, who is actually our friend Anthony Sobecki. Dom G actually couldn't make it to the tournament. So, yeah, that was...
rolling off the list. I'm like, that must be him.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. And then also, too, I mean... the interactions with you and our family friend of ours in the comment section was awesome.
Well, we were reading those comments section. It was hilarious. He was like, he's more like F-350 than F-250. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, that was that was awesome. But I mean, thank you guys, because I mean, without your, I guess, commentating, your broadcasting skills, I mean, it wouldn't have been as good. I mean, you guys truly took it to the next level. Everyone loved you guys. I mean, I came home and my parents were like, listen, whoever they were, I know I've never met them. I mean, obviously they know you, but like they don't know like the rest of the team. They're like, they were awesome.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh my gosh, like we need more.
Right.
So like, well, it was awesome.
And two of the people that we brought out too were just coming off their freshman year of college, where they've only called maybe 5-6 games in the past, and you get a rhythm for it. That was a great experience for them to, you know, actually start to get really good at broadcasting. And, you know, you gave us the opportunity. We're going to give you the opportunity. And obviously, we're helping special sports and giving them more opportunities. So, you know, couldn't be for a better cause. I'm looking forward to doing this again. It was a ton of fun. And I hope this becomes, you know, something that we do every single year, even well after we're out of college.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. But, I mean, special sports truly like was just great working with them. I mean, obviously, what a great family, and just raising money, like, you know, it's hard, you know.
It is.
Some people, you know, don't really have the funds to donate. Some people, you know, just kind of keep to themselves. But I mean, the amount of money we were able to raise, you know, help pay for a pool party for them, just to celebrate, have fun, and that's truly something, because it was always a goal of mine to give back, and I felt like, you know, this was the time where, you know, I could make like something happen like that. I mean, it took 7 months of playing to find a gym, to find space, and all of that. But I mean, special sports really, you know, it made the league, you know, it gave everyone in the league a bigger picture of what, you know, what this is really meant to be. You know, yes, we're here to play with our friends, we're here to have fun, but we want to give back to the community, because, you know, we have so much in this life, and God's truly blessed each and every one of us. But we felt like this was a chance to really, you know, help others and truly spread awareness, put names out there, and at the same time also have fun with each other and keep it, you know, that backyard basketball league. But I mean, definitely grateful for it, and if it wasn't for all of you guys, the league wouldn't be what it is today, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. But before we do wrap up this podcast, I have a quick little quote of the episode segment for you. So I've been doing this since last year. At first, I would always tell, you know, like the interviewee, like, you know, the question. But now I've kind of, you know, like kept it towards the end, saving it. But so basically what the quote of the episode is I'll read you a quote from a famous athlete, coach. In this case, I have a famous broadcaster.
Ooh.
And so just talk about what this quote means to you, and then wrap it up with a quote that you live by every single day. So the great Jim Nance said, "People dream big." That's kind of one of those motivational sayings.
Oh, yeah.
"But I would dream hard, meaning I just wanted so badly I could feel it." So what does that quote mean to you?
That means a lot. I mean, dream hard so you're just close enough to feel it. It forces you to take action on what your dreams are. A lot of us have big dreams, and to, you know, I mean, all of us want $1 billion right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing to get the $1 billion, you know? And to dream hard so you can actually feel it means you're putting in the work with that end goal in your head. And, you know, it's fitting coming from a guy like Jim Nance, because this is one of the most competitive fields you can get into. And I would argue almost any profession in America, because there are, you know, for college media, you have to go to a Division III school if you want to call games. Because Gus Johnson's calling Ohio State every single week. I ain't calling Ohio State games because they're paying Gus Johnson hundreds of thousands of dollars to call their games. But you know, the NFL, CBS, and Fox only have, what, 6-7 broadcast crews?
Yeah.
And then ESPN has one, and that's it.
Yeah.
So it's competitive. It's really hard to become good at this and get one of those lucky breaks. But Nance is a guy who's been there before. He had to work his way up. He was calling minor league baseball for, you know, living in some, a lot of these guys call minor league baseball, get their start doing that, and are living in some random grandma's basement in the middle of Kansas. And, you know, also working in marketing departments for the minor league organization just to make some money, enough money to live. and pay off their student debt. So, you know, that's the boat that a lot of young broadcasters are in right now, and everyone's had to be there before. And when they're in that stage of their career, when they're still in their 20s, you know, usually you don't see broadcasters get a break unless their dad's a big-name broadcaster until they're, you know, in their mid-30s, early 40s. So you're scraping by, barely making any money before that. And in those years where you're in your 20s, you know, a lot of the guys drop out. A lot of the guys say, well, I'm going to go work a regular career and settle down. And, you know, the guys who make it through are the ones who work just hard enough that they can feel it, that, hey, I'm about to get my lucky break. Jim Nance is also one of my big role models from broadcasting. You know, he actually, his wife is from Beechwood.
Really?
And he has a house in Beechwood, Ohio, that he'll spend summers at. When he's not calling golf or when he's not calling basketball and before football season, like those breaks, he'll live in Beechwood.
Wow.
Which is crazy. I mean, I think I need to spend more time on the east side. I grew up on the west side, but, you know, maybe I'll go hit the grocery stores up in Beechwood and maybe run into Jim Nance. I'm sure he would love a fan running up to him and just being a fanboy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, can I get your picture? Oh, thank you. But, no, Jim Nance is a big role model for me. A motto that I live by is, there are a few, and people around here at WJCU always make fun of me for being too sentimental when it comes to some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't consider myself the most religious guy in the world. Obviously, I went to Catholic school my whole life. But when you try to, you know, wrapping up what we've talked about a little bit today and the role that I've taken, when it comes to giving back to others, when it comes to, you know, being someone who cares genuinely about other people and what they're doing and not just focusing on the work that you do, and, you know, because other people are happy around you, usually that makes you happier. There's a quote that I've lived by from a prayer that's said every single day at St. Ignatius High School that I've stuck with, and I'm actually thinking of getting it tattooed on me somewhere.
Wow, all right.
So it's from the Prayer for Generosity. It's like the last four, or the middle four lines of it, and the four lines are: to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labor and not to ask for reward. So living by those lines and being able to be humble and you know, down to earth about everything, it makes you think in a way where you're gonna be more willing to help somebody else out when they need it. You're putting yourself in someone else's shoes even more. And this applies to more than just your job. It applies to your friends. It applies to your social life. It applies to your family, you know. And it also gives you a little humble to say, well, maybe something that's going on right now isn't as big of a deal as you think. So, you know, being able to give someone else and, you know, not being able to go back to them 2 weeks later and say, well, hey, where are my $20 now? You know,
yeah.
To not, you know, worry about how hard it is for you as long as it's going to be good for somebody else you care about. You know, the big thing that I take away from doing all this here, I love doing radio. I love sports. I love this broadcasting. I'm not going to remember every single broadcast I've ever called. I don't remember every broadcast I've ever called. There are half the JV games from when I was in high school that I prefer not to remember. I don't remember every John Carroll game. I remember some of the big moments, but when I think of this time in my life and what I've done around here, the first thing that comes to my mind is not the work that I've done. It's the people that I've been around and the experiences I've had with those people.
Yeah.
So that's what you remember from all of it. And, you know, is that the most motivational quote in the world? No, but I think when you're able to go back and retrospect and think deeply about that, it gives you a little motivation to live up to a standard that you hold yourself to say, hey, I might have somebody else who relies on me right now. I got to go prove it to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has been a lot of fun today, Marcelo. Hey. This is, in retrospect, this is where, everyone says, oh, Bobby, you're getting too sentimental now. Shut the hell up.
Hey, Bobby, that was awesome. But, you know, that'll do it for this episode from the Lions Cove podcast. Bobby, thank you so much. This was one of my favorite I guess, episodes that I've filled. I mean, this is awesome.
This is a ton of fun. I will come back anytime you want me to, Marcelo. This has been a ton of fun coming on today. And, you know, I look forward to, you've been producing some great content lately. I love listening to this podcast, and I look forward to listening to it in the future. Maybe not this one, because I don't like listening to myself talk and in all my clips again. But, you know, I hope other people will enjoy hearing this one.
People,
thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, because people definitely will love this, and make sure you share it with your friends, family, share it with
with
people out there. I mean, Bobby, again, great friend of mine, great guy, and he's done a lot of things here at John Carroll, and truly a great friend to have. Very, very blessed to have him in my life and a part of this journey. But that'll do it. Thank you very much, and we'll start off season 3 with a bang. So see you guys later. Peace.